You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Wes Matlock, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks. She had a pet snake. She bought a red guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there to tell her what to do. So she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess who saved herself.
This episode is brought to you by our patron, Kathy Ferguson, professor of political theory in Star Trek.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mythgreens Podcast. I'm your host, Wes, and with me is...
Chris.
And...
Oren.
And so today we're talking about the races found in fantasy stories, role-playing games, books, what have you. I was thinking about this, listening to that wonderful podcast you guys did on classes. And so I started off thinking them as role-playing game kits and all kinds of things. And then I spiraled out of control and made you all talk about this with me. So here we are.
But what about second breakfast?
What about it? I want to start off first with just the word choice here. So they call it a fantasy race. And then we have like a canon of items include like humans, dwarves, elves, orcs, gnomes, halflings for like a rough starting point.
Yeah, that's most of them.
But okay, and so... I guess it's just, I don't know, maybe something like species would have made more sense to me. I know that like there are like examples of like half orc or half elf, which suggests that they're the same race and not a separate species, but I don't know. But then they also have like variations within them that would make more sense as like, I don't know, like I'm stumbling on this.
Okay, so the secret to species is that the distinction of what is and is not the same species is super arbitrary. Because we used to think that it was all ironclad and it was like species were like things that could breed and that was a species. But then we found out there are all these things that we thought were different species because they look super different that can totally breed. And it's like, okay, that's weird. And so now we have like this really like kind of ad hoc system where it's like a species is something that looks like a species is essentially the definition.
Yeah, and I think there are also weird situations where species B can breed with species A and species C, but species A and C can't breed with each other.
Like, right, that's part of why it's so hard to define species.
And, or like these two might be able to breed, but they live in different locations and they never will. And but still, the word races does suggest something, that they were almost replacements for people.
Well,
right?
Yeah, and I definitely feel like if elves were real, they would be considered a separate species.
Yeah.
Because not only do they look different, but they have very different like traits that humans don't have. Namely, they live a super long time, and very often they have like night vision. And things that go beyond, like, basic, like, phenotypes, right? Like, human beings, even though we have a lot of diversity in the way we look, for 99.99% of the time, we're about the same when it comes to our actual, like, physical traits. There are, like, some really weird edge cases, but for the most part, we're all the same. Whereas the difference between a human and an elf is pretty startling in terms of, like, what an elf is capable of and what a human is capable of.
Right, but my question about the word races is, what are these different things that actually species represent to us that we are calling them races? Like, generally, if they get too far from human-like, we start calling them fantasy creatures.
Right?
And there's something about the word races that suggests that even though they're clearly more like different species than us, they're almost representing different types of humans.
Right. And maybe that's because they show up usually as choices for player characters. Right.
Right. Well, and I mean, of course, like in your standard high fantasy setting, it's still extremely heavy default to white people. Yeah. Right. So it's like, that's sort of your default race, as it were. And then, you know, it gets kind of gross after that.
Yeah, and I think it's impossible, of course, to ignore that almost all the fantasy races we think of by default are Tolkien specified, right? We have a huge mm-hmm. Tolkien legacy. But I think it's kind of blurry where we stop calling them races and start calling them creatures. Mm-hmm. You know, when they get certainly if they
yeah
certainly fantasy races are supposed to talk and be intelligent, right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. But is an ogre a race or a creature?
Right. I mean, mm-hmm. I would. Yeah, that's a good like question. I mean, I would say if it runs on all fours, we would probably stop calling it a race.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
But yeah, and I was thinking about it, and I was trying to think of like there's not that many fantasy races that are memorable that come from books that do not come from Tolkien that I could think of when I tried. It's like, so what's a cool fantasy race that I've seen recently that is like humans?
Yeah,
but actually original.
Yeah, I mean, all of Tolkien's stuff, he just basically took from like Germanic and Norse mythology and maybe like a hint of Celtic stuff here. The ones we call races, I mean, there's like a ton of other things that come from mythology. Like look at Greek mm-hmm. mythology. I mean, we get the Minotaur and Centaurs and Pegasi and like dragons and all kinds of cool stuff. Maybe that's a nod to Greek mythology that D&D includes dragonborn as a race. I don't, yeah.
I mean, the dragonborn is definitely like one of the big shakeups to the standard RPG race
yeah.
thing, right? Is that dragonborn are now a thing. And it's like, what if you wanted to play a dragon? And it's like, well, now you can. if I were to think of a couple of like kind of common fantasy races that aren't at least super prevalent in Lord of the Rings, are there merpeople in Lord of the Rings?
That's a good question.
Not that I know of.
I don't think so.
Because I think merpeople and like the various subgroups, like sometimes sirens are a playable race, as it were.
Yeah, and that's Greek like, origins, right? Homer.
Yeah, yeah, and that's fairly common. Like the idea of like some kind of aquatic human thing is pretty common in fantasy, and it's not Tolkien, at least not as far as I know. Mm-hmm. But I actually think the biggest like sort of change in the general understanding of fantasy races hasn't really come from injecting new ones into the mix. It's mostly come from the idea of rehabilitating races that have been generally considered to be the evil mm-hmm. races.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the idea of goblins and kobolds and like lizard folk as just like people with like, you know, motivations and a civilization and such, that is I think what's really changing up the fantasy race meta. Like those things were already in there, although I don't think lizard people are Tolkien, but whatever. you know, they already were there, but until now they were, you know, they were cannon fodder. They were like a thing you killed for experience points and some copper pieces. But now the idea of like, well, maybe they are also people is the big change, right, that we're seeing, right? Like that's definitely like the state of where fantasy is now. If you're going to be using fantasy races at all, a lot of high fantasy doesn't even do that anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like Martin, the Game of Thrones doesn't have any fantasy races.
Yes, he does. For... The what are they called? The child, like
the Children of the Forest. Yeah. I was gonna say, with the exception of the Children of the Forest, who are like barely present in the story, mm-hmm. and when they do show up, are like supposed to be like weird and different, and like are sort of a sign of like the old times when magic was around and was scary.
I guess the mm-hmm. giants too then. Perform a similar role.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's a couple fantasy races in Game of Thrones, but clearly it's meant to feel like magic is lost and slowly coming back, and so it really focuses on humans a lot.
Oren, that talk about, I mean, the transition to like show that, you know, a community of goblins like has mm-hmm. diversity in it. I'm curious if you guys think it, like, why we're, I mean, I'm glad that like the perception has shifted there, but it makes me wonder if like just the concept of having like defined, established fantasy races is a little racist, because it's basically creating like an idealized standard of a specific group of people that is like all dwarves are good at stonework, period. Like, and I mean, this mostly shows up in like video and role playing games. And I just wonder if like enough people got frustrated at that, that, you know, or enough people wanted to try to break the mold, that they started including mm-hmm. these types of things and realized that no, like it's not a healthy presentation to say that all like orcs just are barbarous murderers.
Yeah, I mean, the general state of the fantasy right now is that, like, most fantasy authors, and I think most readers even, like, have gotten to the point where we understand that applying one trait to an entire group, be that a fantasy race or a group of humans, is not mm-hmm. correct. And so, right now, part, like, the subverting the classic fantasy races is a real hot thing right now. It probably will be for quite some time. You know, Discworld got a lot of mileage out of that. And I think part of the reason why we aren't seeing very many, like, classic fantasy stories with, like, the classic fantasy races nowadays is just that people are kind of realizing that if you take out the whole, like, the evil races, like the evil orcs and goblins and what have you, you, like, you're left without a really strong reason to include all these fantasy races at yeah. all. Like, what is their purpose if not to demonstrate that there are like these monstrous civilizations that we must oppose?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what role do they serve outside of that? And so then your options are like, well, I could subvert them and you can still do that, but after a while that will get old. And I think that's part of the reason why those fantasy races are kind of falling by the wayside for the most part. Is that as people are moving away from the really problematic, like, monolithic evil portrayals of them, it's like, well, what else, you know, what reason remains to include them in your story? What else do they give?
I would agree that in most cases you need to subvert them, and I think the subversion doesn't have to be quite as overt as Terry Pratchett. I know there was, is it called The Goblin Emperor?
Mm-hmm.
Where just the act of having a main character who is a goblin, or part goblin, and putting him in the center of elves is at some level subversive, right? And that basically, if you're going to use races, at least Tolkien races, or races that people are that familiar with at this point, it's because you want those cultural associations that you have with them, and you were responding to that in some way. I think, besides responding to it, also if your story is just really short, you don't have time to explain...
Right. Yeah.
A lot of mm-hmm. like world building new races, and so using races that people are already familiar with just allows you to unburden your story a little bit and save time. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you know, working with them means that you want that a cultural association, and it's okay that it's kind of tired and getting a little old.
Yeah, although it is worth noting, I think, that in The Goblin Emperor, the fact that the main character is an elf, or half goblin, half elf, and the characters around him are all elves, is super forgettable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. yes, technically these are elves, but the only thing about them that makes them different from humans is that their ears swivel to show their emotions, and that isn't actually even used that often. It's kind of a cool thing, and it, like, establishes some novelty in the beginning, but it isn't actually as important as you would think it might be. And other than the ear thing, you could just say they were humans, and the story would be exactly the same. Because the main character would be half this group of humans and half that group of humans, mm-hmm. right?
I mean, that might be true, but I don't think that's an issue with the concept itself. I think that's just an issue with implementation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think that having that set up with the goblins and elves is taking away from the story so much as it was not actually used to its potential.
Well, that does raise a question that I'm not really 100% like clear on how to address, which is, like, you know, it bothers me when I read a story and it's like, yeah, that you say that these are elves, but they really seem just like humans. But, like, also, if they actually were, like, weird and different, and not like humans, that would make it harder to get into the story. Since that's where the story takes place, is among the elves.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really sure what the solution to that is. I mean, and that's a problem in sci-fi too, right? Where it's like, your aliens are supposed to be, like, different and not human, but oops, you made them different and not human, and now they're hard to relate to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that's definitely tough. And then, I mean, there's probably some sort of balancing factor there, but it's hard to say, like, ooh, is there a nice sweet spot where they totally seem non-human, and at the same time, they're totally relatable. You know, it's hard to say for sure.
And it really depends on, especially like for a story, whose perspective, like your viewpoint character, and like if you've got different fantasy races, what is the viewpoint character's race and how do they perceive these other ones? Like, what purpose are they serving? You know, it's like, yeah, is your viewpoint character a human? And so all of these elves like are hauntingly beautiful and like a little inscrutable, but the human feels jealousy about it and doesn't really know how to get into their social circles, or I mean that's really derivative, but I'm just, there's got to be like really good ways to use them, and if you are thinking about that, it should be very deliberate. Like what will that inclusion accomplish that just a bunch of like humans won't?
Yeah. I would say in most of the circumstances where you're using, you know, straight up elves that are hauntingly beautiful, that fit all of the elf stereotypes, it's almost more worth it to, instead of using elves, try to create something that is significantly different than elves, but mm-hmm. still accomplishes what you want to, because it will seem like the impact of elves and their beauty and their long life has been lost because we're too used to it now, right?
Yeah, that's why, I mean, think about subverting, that's what they did in Dragon Age Origins, or just that world, right? They like made elves somehow basically just humans with pointy ears. And it was like, oh, they have this like lot, they lost their ability to live for hundreds of years. And that's mm-hmm. interesting, I guess. It doesn't matter in the story, but it makes you wonder.
mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the thing about the elves in Dragon Age was the subversion there was that the elves were basically an oppressed minority. Right. And like the concept of them was that they were basically Tolkien elves who got conquered by humans. And so like, you know, they're like the, like how they're a whole story of like how the mighty have fallen, kind of thing. Which it has its own novelty. Yeah. There's a little novelty there. I'll give them that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Otherwise, the fantasy races in Dragon Age are pretty standard.
Mm-hmm. But it is, you know, when you're using a fantasy race, it doesn't have to be from Tolkien. It doesn't have to be from folklore of some kind. Like, you can make up your own. And that's what I was saying. It is actually very hard for me to think of at least memorable races that writers have just made up.
Yeah. I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Well, I think that like writers and storytellers are better served to just do some kind of like, I don't know, like augmented human or you know, a human variant, you know, or just have people use magic. Like like wizards, I mean, and witches and warlocks, they're all more memorable than some of these other made up races.
Mm-hmm. It kind of reminds me of a Blue Rose, the RPG setting, where like, okay, so Blue Rose has what are clearly standard fantasy races that are like called different things, and I'm like, okay, sure, whatever, that's fine. These are clearly orcs, these are clearly elves, these are clearly half elves or dark elves, that's fine. They're called something else, whatever. But it really got me that there's this part in there where they talk about how, like, this isn't your standard fantasy setting of elves and orcs. And it's like, it totally is Blue Rose.
No, but we changed the names.
I'm not fooled that this race of green people who was created by the Dark Lord to be his servants. I know those are orcs. You showed me a picture of them. They are clearly orcs.
Yeah.
It's like, if you want to, you know, call them something else, fine. But, like, it got weird when it was like, we are more cool and edgy because we don't use those fantasy races. And it's like, yeah, but you did.
I mean, I would argue it's not fine. Don't, if they're clearly can be swapped out without people noticing, don't call them something else, right? And mm-hmm. maybe in a role-playing game, it wouldn't matter as much. But when you're writing, it certainly adds overhead and burdens you with the explanation.
Yeah.
Of like, suddenly you have to explain what elves are all over again because you're calling them by a different name. And when you get done mm-hmm. with all that explanation, the only reward that your audience gets is, oh, those are elves.
It's such a letdown.
But this is different from what you were saying earlier about, like, if you have a fantasy race that does the whole, like, ethereal beauty of the elves thing, call them have them be something other than elves.
I'm just saying that, like, it's better to make something completely original than it is to copy Tolkien races at this point. But at the same time, if you have something that is close enough to elves, like it needs to be actually substantially different from elves, or mm-hmm. you should call it elves and just give them a twist, right? Like doing just putting yeah. elves straight up as they are in your story is not very satisfying because they've lost all novelty, right? And you're right that in that particular situation, it probably shouldn't suggest creating a whole nother race, because probably what would happen is they'll create slightly different elves. And then they should, in that case, they should just be elves, you know? And...
Well, elves, you can put like a noun in front of their name and or an adjective, and then you have a different kind of elf. You got your wood elves and your high elves and your dark elves and your mist elves.
Moon elves.
You just put like, you know, there's a lot of different kind of
yeah,
elves.
Yeah, and if it's unique enough, maybe like I have mirror elves. They only live on the other side of mirrors. You know, maybe that would actually be memorable, right? But the thing is that it's the substance of the thing, how different they actually are from the thing, that matters, not what you call them. And calling, if they're close enough, then it's going to be easier to explain if you just start by calling them elves,
mm-hmm.
right? And the unique traits that they have will still make a difference, even though you're calling them elves. Whereas you call them something else when you get to the point where they are easier to explain by calling them something else, because if you try to call them elves, everybody's going to end up confused and misled because they're not anything like elves.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Actually, here's mm-hmm. one. This is like, I was thinking, I was like, okay, there has to be some fantasy novel that I've read that had non-Tolkien fantasy races. And the one, I finally thought of one. And it's the Stormlight Archives by Brandon Sanderson. Which I didn't like for other reasons that were unrelated, but they have these guys called the Parshendi, who are just kind of neat. I liked them. I thought they were cool. They like, you know, they weren't like so great that they could carry the story on their own, but like I enjoyed them. They had like a cool description, and they like had like this kind of natural carapace that they grew. I was into that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like they weren't an obvious stand-in for any existing Tolkien race. The closest they could is that they were sort of the closest they were to anything was orcs, and even then they don't have the, you know, the sort of standard green tusk brutish thing of the orcs going on. They were portrayed as very refined.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. There's one.
There's one.
I thought of one. I found that after a lot of thinking.
Can I just mention a couple like funny like folklore races that I have run
Absolutely.
Into?
Absolutely.
Yeah, please.
Okay. So one of my favorites, and this the only story I've actually seen it in, that's like a modern fantasy story, is the show Lost Girl.
Lost Girl.
But apparently there's a kind of fairy that is like Irish called the Dullahan. And it is a headless horseman fairy that, like, basically is, like, they're, like, headless horsemen. They ride around on a horse carrying their head, and, like, they have, like, a whip made of, like, spine, and then they scare people. But in Lost Girl, if you've never seen Lost Girl, just watch the second episode. It is amazing. She's
so funny.
She's beset by these, like, assassins who are apparently Dullahan, but they're described, the way they're described is they have, because Lost Girl... It's all about fae, but they don't want to make it magical for some reason. They want to believe that they're just, like, you know, separate species that have evolved differently.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently, according to Lost Girl, the Dullahan have evolved the ability to remove their heads.
Oh.
And, like, whereas you can imagine, like, a headless horseman just, like, riding alongside with the head and whatever, the head's right under his, you know, his arm, we can still see. In Lost Girl, they will do things like take off their head... And then, like, put it somewhere, and then, like, go after her without a head. And it's just like, well, what if somebody just, like, grabs your head and just destroys it? Like,
which is exactly what happens in Cinderella.
and it's just like, why are they doing this? Why did they evolve this ability? What is it giving them? I don't even know. And
I mean, like, there's the best implication that they never say or even really indicate is that it's like a lich where, like, they can't be destroyed unless you find their mm-hmm. head. That's, like, obviously not true, but that's the best I can come up
right.
with.
But they, like, bring the heads with them to the fight and then, like, set them down and walk away.
Right.
It doesn't seem...
In, like, a laundry... But they put them in, like, a laundry bin. No one would think to look there.
Another thing I wanted to mention, which is, I thought this was like older from folklore, but apparently they're actually from World War II era. And you could debate whether they're actually in the races category, but Gremlins.
Yeah, I heard those showed up a little earlier than that, but I love that they like came with technology. I think that's the coolest thing. It's like, why is that machine not working? It's the gremlins inside of it.
Mm-hmm. It's like the what now? What, have you not heard of gremlins? They're the hot new fantasy race.
But like, I can imagine like the idea of World War II airmen that like so many things went wrong with their planes. You know, that they would just start making up that it was the gremlins. But if you actually look back, gremlins, they feel like they are basically imps.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a question of whether or not the name gremlin like came from some folklore creature. But I have to say, imps don't really get enough attention in my opinion. They are little, they are mischievous, but the best part is in some of the stories, they're actually like lonely.
Mm.
And they play tricks because they like want human attention. Which I think makes them the best. And apparently Rumpelstiltskin is actually supposed to be like an imp.
Oh. Huh.
Which seems weird because I thought he was a dwarf. But because a lot of like in Brothers Grimm, like the dwarves will like show up and like cast spells and stuff. They feel a lot more like fae or, you know, other things.
Right.
But no, apparently he's imp-like. He's an impish creature.
That's much more interesting.
Oh, I just thought of I think two pretty well-known fantasy races that are not Tolkien, that a lot of people are familiar with, are from Elder Scrolls. Khajiit and Argonians.
Cat people
and lizard. I mean, we talked about lizard folk, I guess, or how you want to define it. But those ones have, I mean, in as far, like the video games are pretty good, and so they like acquired some popularity via, you know, memes and other such things.
Anthropomorphized animals are like a fairly common one that's like not Tolkien, but like you see them in a lot of places, right? Like the Khajiit are probably some of the better known cat people because they have funny internet memes about how they have wares if you have coin and such things. But they're pretty common all over the place. I actually really liked the rat people in Final Fantasy IX, even though that part of the story was like really underdeveloped and like I feel like was cut from the game for time. But rat people were cool. I was into them. I like rat people.
Plus the character of Freya in that, she was great. Like, I liked her story.
Yeah, she had like a tragic backstory that I never quite figured out what was going on with. But
yeah,
like
before we run out of time here, do either of you, like, if you're gonna sit down and play a video game or, you know, roll a new character, have a preferred non-human fantasy race that you would choose?
Well, I'm too much of a power gamer to do anything other than like whatever will make the most sense for the build that I'm doing. although like I almost played an elf in Skyrim, and then I saw what the elves in Skyrim look like, and I was like, no thanks.
I find that I'm fond of gnomes.
Yeah.
I mean, I do like how, you know, they're kind of like mischievous. I do like playing some mischievous characters sometimes, but I also just like the modern day association with like gnomes and like the garden and stuff like that, and I think they're fun and playful. I guess I like little creatures since I was just talking about imps. Like little races.
Mm-hmm.
What about US?
Yeah, well, Chris, yeah, I find myself attracted to gnomes and dwarves as well. I don't know. I guess I like how both of those like races have a strong like affinity with the ground. That appeals to me. So do caves. Caves appeal to me, and like adventures into the bowels of the earth also interest me. So it's plus so does gold and gemstones. So many things.
Yes, those are very good things.
Sounds like
so
somebody needs to play Torchbearer.
Oh dear.
All right, well, with that, I think it is time to draw this episode to a close. Those of you at home, if anything we said piqued your interest, you can comment about it on the website at mythgreens.com. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week.
If you enjoyed this episode, consider leaving us a review on iTunes so we can continue to grow like a swarm of nanites. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale, and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he came around.
Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. He accepted it graciously. Now he visits every weekend with the princess who saved herself.
This has been the Mythgreant Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Coulton.